Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Ann Garner calling in from California. We've had some technical difficulties here with the wireless, but life is good. And what we'll do, we'll open up with the song, and I'm using someone else's computer that I'm not familiar with. It is not my regular computer. Let me just bring in our gentleman, and I'll bring all three of you in. Let's see here. Hello, you're on the air. Let's see. Let's start out with James. Are you with me?
Yes, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning. It's been interesting the last 7 minutes. Preston, are you with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, and I need to step away and set up the chat room, gentlemen. We had problems
okay.
here. You know how it is when you go somewhere and using somebody else's wireless? And now I'm going to owe a ton of money on this phone call because the caller calling card did not work, and we're not sure why. But such is life. We've never done this. We'll just take up a love offering, right? I love it. And I'm using a Mac for the first time in my life. Our daughter, let's see here, and I'm trying to actually get a song and. James, you may have to do what Pato did and sing a cappella for us while I set up the, or y'all just talk on. Let's see here. Oh, here's my, but do you want me to play Mandarin of Choice? I know you didn't like it, the quality of it.
Well, there was some problems with distortion in that version that was playing the last 2 weeks. I wanted to apologize to everybody for that.
Well, we can play Pato, Let There Be Love. How about that? They'll give me a chance to set up the chat room.
Very good. Let her rip.
And I know Chris is here, but I don't think he's going to be speaking for a little bit, which is fine. So just let us know when you want to talk, Dr. Halverson.
I'm here. I can talk at any time.
We give you total permission to talk. And well, you know what, gentlemen, let's do a bumper, and y'all can start. James, you know what we're doing here as far as the line of the way the show is laid out, because there's people trying to get in the chat room. And so y'all just start chatting, and I'm going to go and try to get everybody set up in the chat room. And so take it away, James. You can
Great.
Introduce our friend and start the round of interactions.
Great, Ann. Go ahead and take care of the technical aspects there, and welcome everybody to the show. Good morning, and good morning to my co-host, Chris Halverson. Howdy to Chris in Boulder.
Good morning.
Good morning to Preston Thomas from Earliesville, Virginia. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Chris?
Well, I'm
Great.
Doing pretty good.
All right. Well, you know, I think the best thing to do to start out here is to introduce yourself. And give a little background on what your current ministry is and your background with the Urantia book and how that all ties together.
Oh, well, that's a bunch of things you asked me here. With the Urantia book first, I came to that in 1970 and have been a close student of that ever since. Particular focus right now is really on the life and teachings of Jesus, and I have published a book entitled The Life and Teachings of Jesus, which I'd like to tell you a little bit about. Let me tell you a little bit about the book, and then I'll kind of tell you how it came to be. First, the book is really a restatement of Jesus' life and teachings that was created by putting together verses from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These verses were chosen with an eye towards they were put in a chronological format. Sort of inspired by the Urantia book, and even the translations that I have chosen, which is generally the Revised Standard, were the ones most in harmony with the Urantia book.
Preston, let me stop you right there, and just
right.
for our listeners to go into the Gospels have a lot of valuable information, but this idea about the chronological order, I found that was really enlightening the way you did that. Tell us a little bit more about that.
A lot of people have told me how helpful that is. You know, one of the interesting things the Urantia book says is, of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it. And by putting his life together from birth through death and resurrection, you can really get a much better feel for the life he lived, whereas, of course, in the Bible, it's all broken up. So it gives a sort of a nice story format, which makes it easier to read, and I think really gives you a much deeper understanding of Jesus and the ideal life that he led. One of the really valuable things about the life he led, of course, is that he lived the teachings that he taught. So he's really our best demonstration of the teachings themselves. They're not just sort of teachings out there in the air. Here's someone who's actually lived them. So anyway, I put this together, and the idea of it was to kind of give a simple and true statement of Jesus' life and teachings that would be readily acceptable by most people, especially those with a Christian background. I live, and most of us live, I think, in a Christian culture, and it's always been very important to me to be able to relate to others without putting them off. And so this book has been an ideal way for me to relate to others and to share the truths that I have found in a way that is acceptable by most people.
Yes, Preston. Now, did you have a Christian upbringing and background that made it easier for you to go into this ministry of cross-fertilization?
Yeah, very much so. I grew up in the Baptist Church here in Virginia, and most of my family and friends are sort of mainline Christian background, and so I've always had very good relations and can talk religion without them imposing a book that they don't know about in between us. And so it's been a very helpful thing to me and helpful in relating to my loved ones, to friends and family.
Urantia book readers, take note. Take note of what Preston is talking about here, because personally I concur with you very much, Preston, and I value what you've done here.
So to go forward, so that's kind of the idea of the book. It's kind of like a modern-day Jefferson Bible, as a matter of fact, because, you know, what Jefferson did was go through the Bible and pick out all the passages that he felt were true and put them together. And that's sort of what I've done. The idea first came to me back in the 60s when my grandmother was dying, and I wanted to have something, some good words to read to her, and I didn't kind of search around what can I read to her. And so I came across a little book, just the teachings of Jesus, which just had just a smattering of his teachings, and I did that, and I think probably that was very helpful to her. Much later, I started a small school, and at that school, we tried to help children with guidance in life as well as learning. And I was concerned when I saw them leaving, and I had nothing to give them for further guidance in life. And so that's when the idea really came to me to get a comprehensive book of the life and teachings of Jesus. And I actually searched for many years for something to do that. I wasn't really ready to do it myself, but when I never found anything that was of value, that really was what I was looking for, then I set myself to doing it. And then 1992, after about 10 years of work, I published the first edition of the book, which we give to students who graduate from our school as a sort of a going away gift. Since then, of course, the hope has grown in me that I could spread this to a much wider audience. And indeed, I've had very good feedback about this book, that it has been helpful to people in many ways. That's kind of sort of an encapsulation of kind of how it came about.
Could you tell us if it's specifically you found that ministers, preachers, pastors have found this useful and have incorporated it into their ministry within their churches?
I have had a variety of reports back on that. Interestingly enough, we have a bunch of pastors in India, from South India, who have discovered the book and are using it and even translating it into their language of Telugu. They have feel they've been quite enlightened by it and write me and say, we're now teaching the original gospel of Jesus to our people.
Wow, that's beautiful. I'm back on the air. I hope people, if you're on the air, folks, the chat room is now open. Some people, but we are on the air. People can listen to us. They don't have to enter into the chat room, which is really good. That's fine with us, and we're going into the archives. So go ahead, please. I'm enjoying this.
Well, Ann, I was really encouraged by something you told me concerning the Presbyterian minister that you had given a copy of the book to.
This is what we call, she just got accepted into the very conservative Baptist churches, the national, and that's wonderful. And she's a Baptist and functions as non-denominational, and her late husband, he had a huge church, and they established a seminary 2 years ago, which is accredited all the way to PhDs. And she was our guest last week, gentlemen.
Yeah, Karen Hawley, Dr. Karen Hawley, yeah.
Right. And so I gave Karen a copy of Preston's book, and now she wants a copy for every seminary student. And Preston, 35 is not enough.
Oh, my goodness.
They actually need 50. So we're going to have it reprinted. And she made a comment. She said, I mean, she just loved it. You know, a longtime pastor can just thumb through it. She looked at your footnotes. She loved the Methodist pastor who, now that's who you might be thinking about. All the books you've sent me are gone to pastors, ministers, and now we need them for other religious leaders, and other faiths are asking for them because they really do love Jesus. They just want to get to know him through the Bible right now. That's the bridge, and that's the valuable service that you're providing. And those footnotes, and the Methodist pastor just completely did a shift. I get his sermons every week, and he's a masterful, masterful preacher. But I just noticed that you've done a lot of research that he doesn't have time to do as far as the scriptures. So kudos. This is just the beginning, and I admire your courage so many years ago to openly say in the front of the book that it was that you were coming from a perspective of a Urantia book reader. That was in 92, right, Preston?
Right, 1992, that's right.
And a lot of people in 92 we were just all, you know, just sort of not sure how to deal with all this. And it's like me sitting on Interfaith Council since 95 openly as a Urantia book reader. And, you know, yes, it takes time, but eventually those ministers of all the religions are now, well, I can't say all of them, but most of them are reading it online or have gotten a copy of the book. And every one of the Christians have your book. See, I've totally run out. I have one left, and I'm not going to let my personal. I think I let your signed copy go. And that's another thing. If you could sign it, just sign it. That also gives people, a tactile experience. Oh, my goodness, this is actually from the gentleman who produced this. There's something very real about that. Not to turn you into a celebrity. Well, Chris, we don't have celebrities in this movement anymore, right?
Well, we've certainly experienced some of the issues with creating celebrities. So let's hope we can all be a little more humble.
Well, you could easily be a celebrity, Chris, and I really respect your. You know what I know about you now that I've known you for a long time, and having sat with you recently, you recognize that you are gifted. Yes, you've brought to the table your mind of you've done something with your intellect. You've gotten yourself educated. You've shown biblically. You've shown yourself to be approved by deep, deep studies. And therefore, you've brought talents to the table, education and skills, but you can't take credit for gifts. All you can do, what does the book say about, you can't cause growth. You can only help me about
supply,
the soil.
Supply favorable conditions.
Yes.
So I see a great maturity overall in the arrangement. Now, we do have some that are leaning toward looking toward celebrities, you know, guru-type people. And if that's what they need in their life, that's where they are right now. If that's what they need, that's all I can say right now, right? So, okay, now stepping back in.
Preston, I have a question.
Yes.
First of all, I give you I have a lot of respect for being open about the Rancho book in your book, even though it's not emblazoned all over the place, it's definitely in there. The question I have that maybe some other Rancho book readers might have is, have you received any negativity from the Christian organization who found out that you were using the Rancho book and thought, well, that wasn't kosher, so to speak, and rejected your book for that purpose?
Well, no, I have not at this point. I really try to walk a line where I want to spread the teachings of Jesus as contained in the Gospels, because this is what we have had for 2,000 years. This is what people accept. As I say, to minister these truths, you don't have to put your Rancho book in between you and them. Now, I want to be honest about where the inspiration has come from, but I am just, I list the Rancho book as a source, but that's about it. I don't talk much about it at all. And indeed, I don't feel the necessity to talk about it. In fact, I look at my book as a little bit like a Reader's Digest version of the Urantia book. I mean, it's just a little short piece that has much of the essential teachings of the Urantia book, and certainly the direction in which the Urantia book points us. Then, of course, with my footnotes, I'm supplying insights that I've gotten and interpretations that I've gotten from the Rancho book. But I have tried consciously not to emphasize the Rancho book, but, you know, to let people know it's there. So, no, I really haven't had any problems at all with it. I've taught this book in the school that I teach. And you know, most people just recognize me as a fellow Christian. So
no
problem.
That's inspiring to hear, and I'm really glad that you're sharing this. And your Rancho book readers out there who have fears of rejection, let's call it what it is. I know a lot of people that I talk to they have these just little background fears about being thought that they're strange for being a Urantia book reader, and it conflicts with their conviction about their faith in the Revelation. But you've shown here that's, that you can walk that line and be very successful with it. So good on you, sir.
Well, thank you. To me, you know, one of the things this book does is that it's a harmony of the Urantia book in the Bible, because what's in my book is the same thing that's in the Urantia book and the same thing that's in the Bible. So it really, to me, should lead a Urantia book believer to gain respect for the Bible. I was very surprised when I went through doing this book to find that almost every major event of Jesus' life that we find in the Urantia book does find some mention in the Bible. It, you know, may just be a couple of lines or something like that, but it's there. This book is really a harmony between the two, and it shows that need not be any great divide. And you know, when Jesus came along, he didn't come along just totally advertising something new. I mean, he said, "Don't put new wine into old wineskins," and he definitely had new teaching, but he didn't come and disparage the Jewish teachings. He exalted the best of the Jewish teachings, and it did the best he could to fit in with the Jewish teachings and to harmonize with the Jewish believers. And indeed, his cult was a Jewish cult for a while. So I think we need to take the same approach to Christians, that we live in a Christian culture, and the truths that are in the Urantia book are the truths that are in the Bible. And I think we need to work with, you know, our friends, family, and associates, and really emphasize these teachings that are the same in both sets of believers. One more thing I would say, I believe this book is a tool of ministry that we can have. It gives us a way that we can minister truths to others without having have them read the Urantia book.
I love that concept. And gentlemen, just to let you know, we have, you were talking about India, and I, as y'all know, I just love the people of India. And most people think I am from India. I guess you know that. And don't ask me why. I guess, well, my daddy was straight black hair, black eyes, and darker skin, and of the Cherokee Nation. So I guess, but I've been involved with them for so many years that I guess you sort of take on the essence of a group of people. But anyway, we have two Indians from India. You know, I have to be careful. I will always say Native American if I'm talking about Indians, because she may be also, the Native American is talking about coming in. She's an elder. And we have two, one from southern India, and this is Larry's friend, and I'm trying to pronounce her name. I call her Angel. Perhaps Larry can write. She was on a couple of weeks ago, and then a new friend of ours on Facebook. I don't remember, Navdeep Singh, how long we've been friends on Facebook, but it was just this instant recognition of a true brother, a true ally, a true friend that worships the one God of Sikhism, and he's just a marvelous, marvelous person. He's in, where did he say he's from? New Delhi? Yes. So how about that? You were talking about the Indians who have the book there and using it in the seminaries, your book, right? So here Indians show up. One has only been with us one other time, and from southern India, and the other one first time. And they're saying, by the way, I'm not sure who Dog is. Dogyo, that's an interesting screen name. Beautifully said, Preston. I like that. So take it away. I'm trying to get it. I'm going to post it on the Facebook. I'm actually working with two computers here now, one a Mac and one a PC. So that's very interesting.
Well, yeah, I want Renjini, or Angel, that's what I call her, too. I've actually sent her some books, too, and I think she's distributing them to her friends there. She's to some pastors there. And then I have another set of pastors in another province who are actually using it and distributing it in a variety of villages. So these people seem very, very devoted and wonderful people, and I'm really happy that that they've recognized some of the truths of the book and are spreading them.
Hey, Preston, you said that you've got the third printing is coming out soon. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, and also any significant revisions or updates or any of your anything to do with helping people find the book and all that?
Well, the third edition is completed and is on the internet now, but it will not be out in book form probably until next year. I'm hoping to do an ebook next. For the third edition, I did add some more footnotes, did some corrections. It's amazing the number of problems or little things that can occur in a book like this. I spent about a year working on that, and really just to make it a little clearer, a little easier to read. But it's not a what you would call a really a major revision, but it is easier to get at. That third edition is now available online, and I guess I'll give you that address right now. That's www.lifeandteachingsofjesus.org, just the name of the book, .org. So that's there, and it can be downloaded, printed out. We've worked a long time to make this website a attractive, useful, user-friendly website, and I hope people will check it out, maybe not right now, maybe after the program. But the third edition itself will not be out in book form for probably another year.
Great. Thank you. Now, I would also recommend that people do check out the website and your Rancho Book readers, especially there's a page with a special note to your Rancho Book readers that expresses a lot of what you've been saying here already, Preston, but also gives some really beautiful quotes that that emphasize this cross-fertilization between the culture of the past of Christianity and the oncoming culture of the Revelation.
Yeah. By the way, on the of course on the website there is a link on every page where you can link from that page in the Life and Teachings of Jesus over to the particular page of the Urantia book that corresponds to that, so you can easily sort of cross reference that. Also, you can link from any verse, Bible verse in my book, to the verse in the Bible. So it's got many, many links that you can use to do further, deeper study. I really look at this as it's kind of a Jesus study Bible, as a matter of fact. And I do think it is of a special use to pastors and ministers and to anyone who wants to minister, as well as just being a helpful presentation, I believe, of Jesus and his life.
Preston, I have a personal question. Over there in Virginia, do you have a study group? Do you attend a study group? Are you active in the social community of your Rancho Book readers?
You know, I had a study group here for many, many years. Let's see, 75, 85, 95, probably for 25 years. But people moving in and out, so we haven't had anything for, you know, probably the last decade, actually. but I don't know. In a way, the time of the study group, I think, is well, I won't say it's past, but it's. I think that was something that was more valuable when the Urantia book was such a really a new phenomenon. Now people are going out in all kinds of different directions, and of course, it is always good to get together socially. But we haven't had a study group here for a while.
I'm going to take a different tack with that when you finish there. Go ahead.
Yeah,
so that's your opinion. See, I'm watching study groups grow. There's a whole new wave coming in. And the reason I encourage people to attend study group either virtually, like what we're doing here is a virtual study group that encourages people, number one, to participate. This is a true Urantia Book study group. And remarkable co-hosts here now, and I'm just so blessed. Secondly, we want to encourage people to go to Chris's website. Chris has a study group every week. They're in Boulder. And you're doing your videos now, right, Chris?
Yeah, we continue to record the videos, and you know we're backed up on getting them post-processed and up on the web. But there's many of them already up there on the website. I couldn't even guess maybe 150 or so. There's a lot of them up there. So
wow, Perfecting Horizons.
.org. Yep.
That's easy to remember.
www.perfectinghorizons.org.
Now, third thing that they're doing, people are going through Skype. Preston, you don't know this. I participate in three study groups each week without leaving my phone. I have my or my computer. So I participate in the Boulder group, the Chicago group, which, James, that's your study group, and Robert Burns' study group in Southern California. Plus, you know, and what I have discovered, if people do not participate in some type of study group in some way, they end up with a knowledge that, what is the best word to use, gentlemen? I know you've come across it, James in particular, you've had people show up, call, that read alone. What happens to their knowledge of the teachings of the Urantia book?
Well, I think you used the right word there when you said socialization. And actually, Preston talked about the benefits of socialization, too.
I would like to say I think maybe I gave the wrong impression there. I'm kind of thinking of new directions rather than, you know, we used to have a study group here. We'd maybe have 2, 3, 4 people would be about it. I mean, if we had a teacher like Chris, I mean, I viewed a number of his, and it's just wonderful. I mean, you know, And something like you're talking about, Ann, with Skype, where there's a different way of sort of getting together. That's, I guess, more what I'm thinking about. It's time for it to kind of take new directions. But the socialization is absolutely critical.
You're talking about a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what we're experiencing. Because now the study group that I had the longest for, oh, my gosh, many, many years, I started it in 1990, yes, because you know how study groups are. I attended other study groups since 1980. Dr. Lawrence Scotty and Kate and Bill Cooper, and then a woman in Dallas that really still treats this. Well, that woman has passed on. Treats it very closed. You have to be selected. You cannot talk to other readers. And y'all may know who I'm talking about in Dallas. And, of course, there's other study groups in Dallas. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that woman. She's shown up at some of the conferences. She really holds a tight rein on people. I didn't even know there were other readers after Scotty introduced me. This is also an interesting phenomenon, and it happens in other countries, James. I'm sure you've seen it. Someone discovers the Urantia book, and they begin to read it and go, wow, this is incredible. And they may not even, and they've never studied with anybody else, or they may have. Well, they start a new group. And they don't, now with the internet, it's a little different, but for years, they won't tell these people that there's a social network. And those people are out there, and they're looking toward that person for all their answers. And that's totally, I just love the concept of the internet. There's a term I have. We don't have to deal with the trolls at the gate anymore. Do y'all know what I mean by that?
The trolls at the bridge.
The trolls at the bridge, right. We don't, we bypassed all that, and I love it. Now, getting back to my study group, David Glass did start showing up. In Texas, you'll drive an hour to 2 hours to do anything. That's just the way it is. We don't think anything about visiting and driving 1 to 3 hours. Running down to Austin is no big deal. That's a 3 hour, 3.5 hour drive. We sat there, though. This is before David Glass started coming. And there was about at least 12 of us. At times I had 30 people. The average attendance was 12 to 18. And we started with the forward. I said, we're going to start with the forward. And we were like, you might say, the blind leading the blind, you know? I said, okay, this isn't going to work. David was not there yet. Our daughter, our younger daughter, was 8. She was there. And she knew, she could explain it better than the rest of us because she had such a clear thought pattern, you know? And she had a big dictionary beside her. We got the tapes of Sadler Jr. And because back then, I don't think we had it on the whole. Well, it wouldn't have mattered if we'd had it on tape. I think there was some version somewhere back there. And we would listen to him, and we'd just lean our heads back, and then we'd try to discuss it. And we went through that forward. I said, we are plowing this ground. We're not letting it go. And I knew that none of us, we were really the blind leading the blind. But what, we pressed on, and then we kicked in gear. And I would say out of all those, the initial 12, every one of them still read the book except for one. And I say that. She's probably reading it wherever she is. And so I suggest to people at least get together wherever you are. Where two or more gather together, the Spirit of the Lord is in your presence. Read together. Socialize. If you can, if you can physically get together, or if you choose, some people choose not to physically get together, then use the virtual study groups and Dr. Halverson's website to engage yourself with the network and stay in touch. And choose, Chris, on your website, what paper did y'all begin with?
Well, it was just a totally organic thing that we were going along for a few years and a couple of people in the group thought, you know, we could record these. Would that be okay? So they got a camera and set it up and started recording, and it coincidentally turned out to be right at the beginning of paper 59. And I have to say that at the same time that it evolved to the point that these people had that idea to start recording, I was growing in my ability to speak with greater clarity to the truths in the book, and it kind of came together at that point. And so we started there at the beginning of paper 59. I mean, we've been doing it ever since. We're in the adjuster papers now, but on the internet is posted up through the beginning of the first religion papers. which is what they were. What are they? Someone help me. I can't remember the numbers. I guess they're 99, 100, 101, 2, 3, 4, yeah.
Papers. Those are wonderful intro papers into, I don't know the term right there, but yes.
So I think it's through the first three sections of paper 99, if I remember right. And then the person who had been doing the post-production on those, and by post-production I mean we're not just putting the raw footage up there, but when the person is reading, the text comes up on the screen, there's annotations of some of my comments, et cetera. But the person who was doing that had to let go of the project. We continue to save the raw footage, and we have a person now who's volunteered to try to pick up the ball again and has gotten himself up to speed. And we should start to get the rest of the religion papers at least starting to be put up there in the coming months. So, it's all a volunteer effort, and it's a huge amount of effort to do the post-production on those things. So it's everyone has to be kind of patient. But like I said, there's 40 papers up there already, with lots and lots of, they're an hour and a half video apiece. So there's lots and lots for people to engage in. And begin to digest. So,
let me just say that I've looked at a number of them, and I just want to congratulate you, Chris, on what a clear, insightful teacher you are, and how helpful it is, and also to compliment those who are doing the post production, because it does come across very nicely. It's a wonderful learning tool, and hopefully more and more people will tune into that because they are available.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Preston. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment of silence.
Next question.
I actually, here, as long as there's a pause, I was listening to you relating some of your experiences with sharing, your book with, if you can call it your book, your editing of the Bible,
right.
Gospels, with other Christians. It's really a lot of, as James said, very encouraging experiences. I guess one of the questions I had was, what kind of a breadth of Christians have you engaged with it? Are a lot of different denominations? Like, for instance, in India, what denominations are those in India?
I don't even know. They've never even mentioned their denomination. In fact, maybe one of the nice things over there that they don't so much have denominations. They just basically had the Bible before my book, and that's all I've ever heard mentioned. Now, around here, as I say, I grew up sort of in a mainline Baptist church, and a lot of Methodist can't say too many Catholics, but just generally regular Christian people is all I can say. And
do you find that the interest that you've experienced is more with what you might call the not so liturgical Christian churches, or is that not the case?
Well, I have had some interesting conversations with my father-in-law, who was sort of my wife was in the Church of Christ, which is a pretty sort of fundamentalist kind of approach. But we've had very good relations there. In fact, I've even engaged him in, we've talked about the atonement doctrine, which I don't really kind of look for problems and things like that, but it kind of came up one time in a conversation, and we exchanged letters back and forth, and I think he respects my view, but I don't think I changed any minds there. But the important part was, you know, we're not split apart. I mean, you know, he knows that I follow and believe in almost all the values that he believes in, and you know, I might be asked to pray, you know, to give the thanks at dinner time, something like that. So, I've just really had no problem at all.
Yeah, well, that's really encouraging. I mean, because I was raised Lutheran. You know, so hence that was my, you know, one of the thoughts in my head about asking about liturgical churches. You know, Lutheran, Episcopalian, Catholic.
I don't have a lot of experience with them. I know one person there who's a Lutheran minister, whom I gave the book to, and I know he taught it in a class for a while, and I haven't had a whole lot of feedback from him, but I mean, he certainly didn't come back and say this is the work of the devil or anything like
right.
that.
Well, I would think that as long as the person is open, the denomination should probably be irrelevant, because I mean, the book is just there, and they can see, okay, these are passages from the Bible, and you know, if they study it for any length of time, they can see how you've woven it together into a chronological story, and they would have to recognize the value of that, fundamentally the non-controversial nature of that.
To me, this is a great value. Again, it's just an easy way to relate to the rest of the world without putting barriers in between us.
Yeah.
You know, and we can talk religion, we can talk what Jesus said, we can talk what's important, we can live a religious life, and, without any hang-ups, that, at least that I've found so far.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing... that I've done in a couple instances of a extremely minor nature, in parallel to what you've done, is pointed out to people that there were 19 post-resurrection appearances of Jesus, you know, and just give them, you know, 1 through 19, and then show that 11 of those are mentioned in the Bible, and just giving them that list of the Bible passages that correspond to each, and then the ones where the Bible doesn't have any mention of, those 8, you know, just putting a dash on that line, you know, and just letting that see if it sparks some curiosity. It's like, I wonder what happened in those other 8, you know? Yeah, you know, and like you mentioned, I mean, sometimes it may be just a little phrase, you know, that refers to one of the resurrection, post-resurrection appearances. But, you know, at least has, you know, a handful of words in the Bible that tie to it. You know, there's very few of them that have extended passages.
To me, the important, crucial thing is, as I say, to me, the Urantia book basically points us to Jesus, and Jesus points us to the kingdom of heaven, which is, doing the will of God, and this is where we ought to be. I mean, if we look at the Urantia book not just as an intellectual book, but as a faith book, and ask, what does it want us to do? Well, it wants us to take the way of Jesus and help extend the way of Jesus in our world. And this is doing the will of God. And I believe that really needs to be, well, at least that is certainly my focus. I think that is what we are directed to do, is to try to expand His kingdom in our world. And basically, you know, the Urantia book says over and over, you know, this is a, we need to make this revelation to the Christian church. So we need to find a way to relate to Christians. You know, great hope of Urantia lies in the possibility of a new revelation of Jesus with a new and enlarged presentation of His saving message, which would spiritually unite in loving service the numerous families of His present-day professed followers.
I agree, and I've tried to make this point to a number of Urantia book readers over the years. You know, that they have to recognize if they're engaging a person who doesn't have the fourth epical revelation yet, you really can't give them the fifth.
And in a way, you don't need the fifth. I mean, the fourth is good enough. I mean, you know, the fourth will get you to Jesus. It can get you to Jesus. It can get you to His teachings. It can get you to the gospel of the kingdom. It can get you to the concept of doing God's will, loving others. And then, you know, if they want to go further, they can go further. I mean, if you think of Jesus here on earth, all the things that He knew that He did not teach, and He did not overteach. He could have told us all about Salvington and Uversa and all this other, but He didn't. He was getting us what we really needed.
You have to know that you're a child of God first.
Yeah.
And then once you have that fourth epical revelation that you are a child of God, you know, you can build upon that and with the fifth that, you know, not only are you a child of God, but you're a cosmic citizen. And what does that mean?
Where's that quote in the papers right at the end that says there's enough in the Bible of the religion of Jesus? And we really want to clarify, since we do have someone asked about denominations. Rinjini from southern India, you might say, I think Larry wrote Hindu Christianity. You know, the Hindus are very open-minded. The Hindu temple that I go to, a very large temple, you go up into the prayer room, large prayer room, it's bigger than the actual sanctuary. And they have pictures of Guru Nanak, of course, they're Hindu saints or gurus, I'll say that. And they have a beautiful painting. These are original paintings of Jesus. The Hindus are so open-minded because they're a very old religion. And they're very, we need to learn from these seasoned religions that have been here forever and a day. Then the other religion that's joining us today is, as y'all know, are the Sikhs. And Navdeep Singh, we welcome you. Wish you could call in sometime from India. I think it's about 11 o'clock there at night, and God bless y'all. I think that's the time difference. Now, the Sikhs, I have been going to the Sikh Gurdwara since the early 90s, almost every week since 95. Now, what's interesting, I hear the gospel there all the time. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, treat your neighbors yourself, in different words. Now, I don't ever hear from the what we call the Granthis, the Gyanajis, the singers of the Shabbats, the hymns, the word Jesus. In saying that, They have never, ever, ever tried to convert me. And they totally embrace where I am, firmly rooted in the teachings of Jesus. And they understand fully, because the opening prayer, since we do have a Sikh in the chat room and listening, I will do the opening prayer. It's very brief, if that's okay with y'all.
Sure.
Okay, sure. It's called the Moor Mantra. It's very brief, and there's more, but I'll just do, let me stand up. I'm looking out in beautiful California with the door open. It's quite lovely here. Okay, this means, I'll give it in English first, there is but one God, his name is truth, never beginning, never ending, without enmity, without strife. There is but one God. So here it goes. Ik omkar satnam kartapuk nirva nirver akalimus ajuni sabhang gurpasad jap. Do you got such? Have you such? And ik omkar. That's a beautiful prayer that opens up every service. And where I'm staying, I'm not with my daughter right now. She's involved in two major movie projects. I'll be going on set to just sit there and do whatever she needs me to do, because that's pretty intense. They have two little daughters. I think they're 7 and 5. And so last night, I just did that initial, what you just heard, and they loved it. They both ran downstairs, and they put their little hands down in their, their stomach area. They said, "Oh, that feels so good right here." And I said, and I taught them ik omkar, and they were going all over the house. I heard them this morning going around ik omkar over and over and over. And you know what? If you just chanted those three words, there's a beautiful and see, that's the om. It goes back to Hinduism. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, great. Thank you. And the passage from the Urantia book that you were referring to is on paper 195 in section 10.
Uh-huh. And the page number in the old book, please?
Page number is 2086.
The original book, I'll say. That's the book I still read, as you know.
Right.
Me too.
We all have our preferences, and that's okay. Chris, you actually, I know the book that you used, which is kind of interesting. It's got all the old book that was only a few printed. That's kind of an interesting.
Well,
right?
I bring that, which is basically a 55 printing. I bring that to study group. Just if it comes up at any point, any of the typo changes and whatnot, if people are curious, I've got it right in front of me there, what it originally said. And, so that's why I started bringing that. It certainly wasn't because it was the smallest book. It's the biggest one that's ever been made. So.
And, talk about misguided and good came out of it because you're using it. I use it in my dining room on the big table. I'll glance over. That man that produced that book, and he had, y'all know, he had this, I was in Montreal in 90, what year was the international in Montreal, 92, 93?
Don't remember, I was there.
93 maybe.
Now this is an interesting story. He walks up to me, and we just don't even have to say his name. We know who it is, although I'm fine. I can't remember his name right now. Big guy. He supposedly had a lot of money. You got to be careful when somebody walks up to you and says, "Hello, my name is Welt." You know? And I always, right. And so he invited me to dinner with his wife, right? So I said, "Oh, okay." I said, It was at a French restaurant, which would be, very understandable. So here we go to this French restaurant. I meet them at a French restaurant. Now, I've seen this in France before. I've been in Paris many times. My husband kept a place in Germany and in Brussels when we did have money. It was just one of those other lives that before everything crashed in the 80s, there was a huge crash with prime interest, and we lost everything. It's interesting when you lose everything. So anyway, in France, we went into a restaurant and they shut the door after so many people. It was only about 12 to 20 people. They closed the door, you had reservations, and the chef, and that's the end of it. Well, so I go to this very nice French restaurant, had two floors. Guess how many people were there? Only the three of us. And he had them lock the doors. How about that? I felt like a mafia movie, you know. We're in the corner like Smith. I said, oh, my God, this man wants me dead or something, you know. I said, okay, I'm with in a French restaurant, not an Italian restaurant. So I said, what's going on? He had literally got that place to himself that night. So then he proceeded to share with me how this had come to him in a vision and that God had told him, now watch this, God told me to do this and to name it this way. He said, and everybody has to read God's version of this book. And I looked at his wife and her face it was unbelievable. She looked like she was in a wind tunnel. You know what I'm talking about? She looked like she was pulling G's sitting in that chair and on her face. And I said, you know what? Jesus said in the Bible and the Ranch book, my sheep will know my voice and a stranger they will not follow. I do not hear the Spirit of Jesus through you. I do not hear. The Spirit of Truth is revealing to me, and it doesn't take a lot of discernment. You're delusional, and you're going to come down because of this, because I sense that you're not appropriate with your monies, and that's going to bring you down. And y'all know it did. And I'm amazed at how these people show up. And people embrace them. Hello, I have a message from on high. And, you know, and I'm the one. James, at the foundation, how many have shown up that say, hello, I'm Jesus. Hello, I'm John the Baptist. Hello, I'm Elijah. Hello, I'm Machiavelli and Melchizedek.
Oh, plenty over the years. Actually, we were just talking about that last night at study group. We had... Michael Painter came up from Indianapolis and joined us for study group, and he was worked there at the foundation in the 80s. I worked there in 2000 to 2005, and now Mike Wood is working there doing the same thing. And we were exchanging stories about all the Michaels of Nebadon who have come knocking on the door at your Ranch Foundation. So, It's part of life, and you know, we all tried to treat them respectfully, but you know, there's something a little bit amiss there.
Well,
the quote at the end of back
yes,
to this
please.
Quote. The very last sentence is a wonderful paragraph that talks about Christianity.
Would you read that paragraph, please?
Well, okay, sure. There on 2086, paragraph 4, Christianity is an extemporized religion, and therefore must it operate in low gear. High gear spiritual performances must await the new revelation and the more general acceptance of the real religion of Jesus. But Christianity is a mighty religion, seeing that the commonplace disciples of a crucified carpenter set in motion those teachings which conquered the Roman world in 300 years, and then went on to triumph over the barbarians who overthrew Rome. The same Christianity conquered, absorbed, and exalted the whole stream of Hebrew theology and Greek philosophy. And then, when this Christian religion became comatose for more than 1,000 years as a result of an overdose of mysteries and paganism, it resurrected itself and virtually reconquered the whole Western world. Christianity contains enough of Jesus' teachings to immortalize it.
Say it again. Christianity contains enough
enough of Jesus' teachings to immortalize it.
Wow, there it is.
So, it is.
And that's, you know, I hear right here, Preston, that's your marching orders.
Well, to me, you know, the Urantia book is very clear about the problems with Christianity, but it's also clear about its respect for Christianity and that we should respect it.
Absolutely.
I think that's an important, and it's an important message for us.
Well, you know, I'm engaged, and we have two Indians here today. I have been engaged with a group of young Indians from India who are very upset, and my good friend Surinder Singh, who I was wondering if he might call today, but he's listening. I know he's listening. And he stepped in, and there were a couple of Indians that just flanked me. It was almost like we were flying an aircraft. And these young men, one is older, they began to verbally really attack me and threaten my life and curse me. And I instantly went, my mind went instantly to two things in the Urantia book. Number one, what you read last night at study group in Chicago about the characteristics of Jesus, how he dealt with situations. I memorized that so many years ago. And in the front of my study book, I have two pages of notes, and I say notes, just references with two or three words. I can glance there all throughout the book of how to do my best to act, interact, and react with humans, other humans. And so I didn't lose my temper, and I just said, okay, this is where they're coming from. I cannot take this personally. They do not know me. And this is getting back to Christianity. And one of them, I mean, he literally threatened my life. And I just said, and he called me a word that I don't even want to say that's usually denoted for men. And I kind of teased him. I said, well, you've done two things here. You've called me this word, and I'm a woman. You've accused me of being the devil, which, you know, I've never been, that's never happened before. You've threatened my life here. Now, I've had my life threatened before by Christians, by the way. But the caveman page, and Surinder Singh stepped in, and another Sikh stepped in, and another Hindu, and just flanked me. It was actually four gentlemen, and like warriors, great warriors, to say, whoa, what are you doing? And I told them, I said, if you're going to take my life out, you better do it looking me in the eye. Just go ahead and do it. And here's where I'm going right now if you want the address. I said But I understood out of the caveman page, in the name of Christianity, their lives have been their culture. What has it done to their culture? To send their kids to school and to give them food if they will become Christians. Now, what does that speak about Christians? Can they see Jesus through all of that?
Why were they attacking you, Anne? Because they thought you were a Christian? Or?
Well, they know I'm a Christian, yes. And
I mean,
was that
the reason they were attacking
you?
Yes, him?
Yes. Now, okay. Now, the two major men apologized. But again, see, the Spirit always, if I never feel that I'm alone, if I end up somewhere physically alone, because I know we're supposed to be two by two, one of three things will happen. Number one, I had to let go of fear a long time ago because of my business career, traveling as a woman when women didn't travel. I've said this before, actually being denied a seat at a table because I was a female alone in the 70s flying all over the country. Can you believe that? They would deny me a seat. They said, you need a man with you. And, of course, I wouldn't take it. I said, I'm going to sit here in the lobby and eat. You can't keep me from sitting down. So I broke a lot of, you know, that dirt. I tell these young women today, you better respect what you've got. So also, though, getting back, if I'm physically alone, I immediately call upon the Spirit to be with me. Because I say, okay, I'm never alone. The Spirit of Jesus, the Spirit of the Holy Spirit, of the Mother Spirit, the Thought Adjuster, my two guardians, and how many are with the guardian angels? I'm assuming I have two guardians. I don't know, gentlemen. I just thought of that. Wait a minute. I got to be careful there.
You have two. They may not be yours individually. But
right. What is it, 1,000?
Starts with a group of 1,000, yeah.
So, you know, if I get in a real tight spot, perhaps they cue in on me temporarily, right? Thank you. So whatever. But almost invariably, someone shows up. I look at planes because I did fly planes when I was younger and gliders a little bit. I love gliders. And they just flank me. You understand what I'm saying? It literally come in beside me to make sure I was not alone. And I'm just so thankful for that. Yes, but I totally got it. Instantly I got it that these men are celebrating Independence Day in India. And they're looking around them and they're saying, what happened to our old culture? What are these Christians doing coming here? It's fine if someone wants to become a Christian. That is okay. I met a group of Chinese young people the other night when I was shooting basketball right before I left. I like to go at a late hour because the courts are pretty empty. And it was a group of young Chinese students, and we were walking out, and the young girl, it was only one female, she started talking to me. And I said, well, you're directly here from China? Yes, we just got here. We're getting our undergraduate degree. I said, well, are you of any particular religion? It doesn't matter to me. And I said, I'm assuming you perhaps might be of Buddhist, Pure Land Buddhist, or you follow Confucianism. This is what most Chinese. Now, listen to what the young man said. And I've come against, I'm going to use that word, because I've stood in front of these people. He said, how'd he put it? He said, I transformed myself. Me.
Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
We lost you, Ann.
Okay, did you hear where did you lose me?
I transformed myself, and then
you lost me on that trail of transformation.
Yes.
I transformed myself, and then he stopped himself. He said, I mean, they transformed me. I've never heard that term before. I said, you were transformed, and I kind of teased him. I said, you're like a transformer? You know, I kind of made these motions like a Chinese dancer would. He said, I now know that if I'm not a Christian, I'm going to hell, and I will burn forever. And I know that church, and I've been upset with them before because they, you know what they do? Every Friday, and I've talked to some of the other denominations about this, they're close to university. I see this at the high school level and the college level. Once a week, they offer free food and real good food. And I've been there before. You sit down and you're eating, be it high school or college. High school is right across the street from the high school, which I think is totally uncalled for, but they separated across the street so nobody can stop them. While they're eating, they're walked up with, you know, what would you call it, the converters? And, man, they come in hard with the hammer. You're not saved. You're going to hell. You're a sinner. If you don't accept this right now, you will burn forever. And we're going to help you. We're finding furniture. We love you. We're giving you furniture. We're giving you food. We're giving you help with your medical. And you will become a Christian. Now, what does that say about Christianity? And especially Jesus.
It gives it a bad name.
And then, yeah. And I've told the story before. My wonderful Chinese friend is back in China. We have communicated. We spent every day together. There's eight gentlemen here for the MBAs. I've told this before on the air, and it's worth telling because we're talking about and celebrating the birth of Jesus. When they had the great, the unbelievable earthquake in China, what, 2 years ago, was I think, or 3 years ago, and I woke up early in the middle of the night and felt these guys. I woke them up calling, well, they were already awake, but I called them around 6:30. Now, that's unheard of. I said, what in the world is going on? And I felt them. Well, they were just, they couldn't even stop crying. Well, and it was just a horrible event. So then he was invited to a Baptist church, very large Baptist church, which is a different vein from the Baptist that you heard from Dr. Holly. Steve and I went for support. I helped him translate his poem about, beautiful poem, and while he was reading it to me in English, after we translated it, I felt the Spirit with him. And I, all of a sudden he looked at me and said, is this what God feels like? He felt the difference. I said, yes, I feel the Spirit through you. He said, my word. Well, then I want to keep this feeling. I said, you just did it. It's yours. He said, is this what the Spirit of Jesus feels like? I said, yes. Well, I want to keep this too. I said, well, it's your choice. He said, I got it and I'm going to keep it. He read that beautiful poem. He had a translator, but he read it also. Beautiful. You know what the pastor got up and did? He prayed right after that. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus, for creating that earthquake in China. Thank you, Lord, for all this tragedy so that we can go there and save these heathens to keep them from burning in hell. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And I thought Steve, he just grabbed my leg. He's a very strong man. And I almost stood up to walk out. That's, you know, I was on the fifth row or seventh row, and I wrote him a note. I'm walking out, and he said, let's just hang in there. Well, I did. I was so upset. I almost stood up and, you know, pointed my prophet finger toward them. You know, anybody, if you point your index finger, that's what I call the spirit of a prophet or a prophetess, which we're all in the Urantia book. It talks about prophets, those who edify, uplift, encourage, and teach. But I just held it. Well, after the service, we walked outside, and he walked out with me. I can't say his Chinese name. I'll say it. Chok Ha Ha. Okay. He walks up to me, and he says, Anne. And Steve heard him. I do not like that Jesus. I refuse to know that Jesus. And my heart just went down. I said, oh, man. He said, no. I want the Jesus that you have in your life. Forget that other Jesus. And they took two Urantia books back to China and the Bible. They took two of your versions of the Bible back to China. So that's my celebration of Jesus' birth is right there. Praise be to the Almighty God that we be voices of reason, voices of truth, voices of righteousness, that these voices drown out those voices that for whatever reason are bringing forth, they cannot see the Spirit of Jesus, the religion of Jesus, through the murky waters.
That's a powerful witness, Anne.
Well, I've said more than I normally, but that is so important to spread that around the planet, proclaim it around the planet.
You know, in the in that section that James brought you to, section 10, paper 195, it opens up, it's entitled The Future, and it says, Christianity has indeed done a great service for this world, but what is now most needed is Jesus, the world needs to see Jesus living again on earth in the experience of spirit-born mortals who effectively reveal the Master to all men. And I think that's our challenge, is to learn the teachings and then live the teachings such that people in seeing us can see Jesus living again through us. And this is the new revelation of Jesus that the Urantia book points to that will really transform the world. This is your Jesus, Ann, not the Jesus of hellfire and brimstone.
Yeah, and in, you know, not only with the life and teachings of Jesus, but the whole fifth epical revelation in general. I mean, you must absorb the truth within you, because you can't obey fact, but you can obey truth. You know, and to do what you were just reading there, Preston. You know, to for them to be able to see, you know, the truth of the Master, you know, expressing in the world again, you know, you must have the truth within you. Facts and ideology and endless zeal attached to those facts, you know, is not going to speak. You know, it's going to turn away, as Ann was just, you know, describing. You know, that person rejecting that was obviously not true. He could tell it was not true. Yeah, and so.
Well, yeah, you know, the Urantia book gives you such a complete picture of Jesus that it gives us the real challenge, because we're the ones who have this, to really understand Jesus in a whole new light. I mean, I respected Jesus before I had the Urantia book, but he was just kind of like I respected Buddha and Lao Tse and Confucius and some others. But with the Urantia book, you get this whole complete picture, such that if we can, again, learn his teachings and then live his teachings, then people see Jesus living through us, and then there's our revelation to the world. But to me, that's our challenge. That's the challenge of a true believer in the Urantia revelation.
Yeah, and as you know, you continue on in that section, and you get to paragraph 5 there in section 10, and that's one of the classic, you know, in winning souls for the Master, it is not the first mile of compulsion, duty, or convention that will transform man and his world, but rather the second mile of free service and liberty-loving devotion that betokens the Jesusonian reaching forth to grasp his brother in love and sweep him on under spiritual guidance toward the higher and divine goal of mortal existence. You know, and that is the challenge that that the revelation puts in front of us, you know, to lift the Master's life and teachings out of compulsion, duty, and convention, you know, and set it free.
Right. And at the very end of that paragraph, it speaks of so few professed followers of Jesus who really live and love as he taught his disciples to live and love and serve. And then the next paragraph, which I think is very significant, the first sentence, the call to the adventure of building a new and transformed human society by means of the spiritual rebirth of the Jesus Brotherhood of the Kingdom should thrill all who believe in him, as men have not been stirred since the days when they walked about on the earth as his companions in the flesh. Again, here's our challenge. I mean, right there is our call, the call to the adventure of building a new society by means of this rebirth of his brotherhood of the kingdom. Again, spreading Jesus' kingdom, you know, knowledge of the fatherhood of God, brotherhood of man, that we're all children of God and should learn to live the will of God in our lives. This to me is what the Urantia book is calling us to do.
Yeah. Well, it's a revelation of truth, not a revelation of facts.
Yeah.
There are some amazing facts about the nature of Jesus, and I would like to read some of those for my segment today for the friendly universe. It's something that calls us all back to a greater understanding of the this occasion that happened, the rarest of the rare, of a divine human. And I took this, I created this study from paper 161, Further Discussions with Rodin, and that is from largely from page 1785 to 86, and it's called The Nature of a Divine Man, The Ideal of Human Friendship. He is the most truly unselfish person we have ever known. He is the friend even of sinners. He dares to love his enemies. He is very loyal to us. It is plain to all that he truly loves us. The better you know him, the more you will love him. You will be charmed by his unswerving devotion. He has been a faithful friend. He does treat us all with equal kindness. He is invariably tender and compassionate. He has shared his life and everything else with us. He never does wrong. He makes no mistakes. His wisdom is extraordinary. His piety, superb. He lives day by day in perfect accord with the Father's will. He prays for us and with us, but he never asks us to pray for him. Our piety springs from repentance, but his piety springs from righteousness. Never is his piety obtrusive or ostentatious. He is both meek and fearless. He unfailingly responds to the spectacle of human need. His compassion is moved alike by physical suffering, mental anguish, or spiritual sorrow. He is quick to recognize the presence of faith. He is so just and fair, and at the same time, so merciful and considerate. He is always sympathetic with our troubled spirits. He strongly loves goodness and equally hates sin. He prays like a man but performs like a god. While he is kind, he is also brave and courageous. He never faults in doing his duty. He also seems to know about the thoughts of his associates. He undoubtedly has communion with celestial personalities. Everything seems to be open to his unique understanding. He asks us questions to draw us out, not to gain information. He speaks with the authority of a divine teacher. He is assertive, positive, and authoritative. He seems to be so sufficient within himself. He craves not the support of the multitude. He is indifferent to the opinions of man. He is so brave and yet so free from pride. He constantly talks about God as an ever-present associate in all that he does. He goes about doing good, for God seems to be in him. He says that anyone who has seen him has seen the Father. He seems to know the future as well as the past. He seems to be so sure about God. And he says and does all these tremendous things with such childlike naturalness.
Beautiful.
Boy, that is profound. That is profound. We're having a beautiful conversation about all this in the chat room, and the Sikh is talking about Jesus, how it relates to his life as a Sikh. He has no, because he really is, he's a brilliant, brilliant young man, and he's totally enjoying our interactions today and celebrating the life of Jesus and the birth. And thank you, Navdeep Singh. Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh. And I've said that for years, that It's just the essence of Jesus. And I know you had a gentleman show up at your study group in Chicago last night from another part of the world. Right, James?
Yeah, that was very interesting. As it turns out, he was he's a native of Pakistan, came here many years ago because he renounced his Muslim upbringing and feared for his life. He was granted religious asylum in this country, and he became a Baha'i. He lives in Wilmette, just north here of Chicago, where the some of you may know the Baha'i Temple is located there. And he was he ran into some Urantia book readers just recently, and they gave him that that partial translation of the Urdu of some sections of the Urantia book, and he was captivated by it, and made an exodus down to Urantia Foundation yesterday so he could learn more about this Urantia book. And he met with us and had dinner with us there and joined us in the study group. And what a lovely man he was, and very wise. And it was really a pleasure to meet Khan.
Well, I enjoyed talking to him. Well, did we complete, as far as what we were talking to Preston about, I'm looking here, were there any other things that we needed to cover? And what a great conversation we're having here. And so as far as the birth of Jesus, that there are people listening that have never read the Urantia book. They're hearing for the first time about the Urantia book. Chris, would you describe why? And by the way, wait, before I say that, there is a young man that got in touch with me. Oh, I got in touch with him through another reader in another country, because he's bringing back the religion of Jesus. So I thought, well, this is interesting. And we've actually talked briefly before he went to Jerusalem. He wrote me last night, and he said, well, and Chris, you're going to have to help me here, and I'll have to find his email, but while you're describing why we feel, not only through the Urantia book, but historically, that Jesus was born in August, I'll find the email of an author he quoted that says, on a measurement of truth versus falsehood regarding the teachings of the Urantia book. So I find that interesting, and I would like to address that later on, and perhaps in another show, because I'm not going to go with what one person says, one writer, one author. I go, there's a reason the Spirit is called the Spirit of Truth, right?
Certainly, yeah.
And I said, okay, if it resonates with me, like I was in a meeting. It was a conference call meeting. It was about seven of us in this conference call meeting, and someone made a statement. Instantly, for lack of a better word, y'all may give me a better phrase here, my truth barometer went bing, bing, bing. I knew that person was telling a lie, not a half-truth, simply a lie. And I said, whatever, whatever. Well, and they know me well enough, if I say whatever, that means I'm not sure if I trust what you just said. If y'all ever hear me say whatever, or if I say that's interesting, right after the meeting, this person emailed with the information, which is fine. They came under conviction. Oh, boy, I just told something that wasn't truth, and I better straighten it up. And I really do care deeply for this person. You know, we have a saying in business, and we're certainly not going to say it on the air. Everybody knows what CYA means, right?
Yep.
I don't. What does it mean?
Ah! Okay, replace I'm going to say that on the air, gentlemen.
You can say it, Dan. It's cover your butt.
I got you. Okay, sorry. I'm a school teacher, not in business.
Right.
So, Chris, I know you've written articles. Cover your... Okay. And so people will sometimes do dramatic things when they're in a place of, I better cover myself. But I'm going to tell you, there was more follow-up in the next 24 hours than we've had. And I really admired this person. And, you know, they just had, for lack of a better word, they had to be called on it. That's my management experience. You know, I love the one-minute manager. And the one-minute manager is really like Jesus. The one-minute manager says, I'm coming to you privately, and I'm going to tell you when you're doing something right. Boom, 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 boom. If there's something that needs to be corrected, I'm coming to you in a one-minute. They use the word reprimand. I like reflective correction. Boom, boom, and then it's over with. You don't apply that to the personality. You seek to hold the self-confidence intact. If you destroy that person's self-confidence, you're no longer an effective manager. I'm thankful for the management experience and training I've had. So anyway, getting back to this, Chris, would you talk about why we believe, as your Rancho Book readers, that Jesus was born August the 21st? And today is when they went into Bethlehem riding on the donkey.
Well, let's see. I suppose the first thing I would say is it's not a matter of belief or disbelief, primarily. In the Revelation, it states that he was born at noon, August 21st, 7 B.C. It's just a statement of a fact. Now, why do I come around to belief in regard to that fact? Well, it's because that statement is in a book that's over 2,000 pages long, which I have challenged aggressively for years and found to withstand all of my best efforts to refute it. It holds together with magnificent consistency. That statement is part of that whole story. I can't directly attempt to refute that fact, but it's a statement that's consistent with all the other statements that they make, many of which I can directly engage. And so it comes along for the ride. Okay, now that being said, I'm just thinking about maybe one of the things to do, I'll just read a couple of sentences that I wrote a few years back. Some people asked me to give a little Christmas time reflection. We had a little get together amongst the local readers, at Christmas time, and that question of the difference between the 25th of December and the 21st of August, they wanted me to speak to that, and amongst the other things that I said, I made the following statement: early Christians did not celebrate Jesus' birth, only his resurrection. Their focus was more on the Son of God than the Son of Man. By the 4th century, many Christians believed that Jesus had been solely a spirit being. So the church decided to begin celebrating Jesus' birth to reinforce his humanity. However, by then, no one remembered the date of his birth. Since the birthday of Mithras was already a widely observed holy day, the church simply declared December 25th to be the feast day of the Nativity. The feast day of the S-U-N, because Mithras was tied to the sun, the feast day of the S-U-N became the feast day of the S-O-N. It's just that simple little, usurping of the existent Mithraic traditions that, that gave us the 25th of December. And most specifically, I mean, why was it thought that Mithras was born on the 25th of December? I mean, that's just the simple fact that back, for most of the last 2,000 years, actually, the common man usually thought of March 25th, which in the Julian calendar was the vernal equinox. They thought of March 25th as New Year's Day. And literally the number of the year changed from March 24th to March 25th. It didn't change on January 1st like we do now. And so, when you conceived of the story of Mithras, he is conceived at the beginning of the year on March 25th. And so he comes to term and is born 9 months later on the winter solstice, on December 25th. I mean, so it's just that simple calendrical thinking that gave you December 25th. Now, in terms of what has the Christian church done since the 4th century in regard to the birth of Jesus? I mean, we all know that scholars, both within the church and outside of the church, as the centuries rolled by, began to actually wonder if they could figure out, based upon the clues in the Bible, when Jesus was actually born, as opposed to just, having the day that, the winter solstice is the day that you celebrate the birth. And, over the centuries, scholars have been getting closer and closer to suspecting that Jesus was born in 7 B.C., what we now call 7 B.C. I've even seen some scholars suspect that it was, perhaps somewhere around fall, or autumn. But, they don't have any information to get any closer in that. So if you want to look at what the Urantiebook says in terms of whether or not it's consistent with the best human scholarship, it certainly is. And many scholars have long suspected that the three conjunctions of Jupiter and Saturn that occurred back then were tied to the tale of the Star of Bethlehem, which the Revelation we all know confirms, and that's another component of the suspicion by many scholars that it was actually 7 B.C. when he was born.
Chris, I have a note in my book on that, which I might read for reinforcing what you're saying here.
Before you say that, I want to apologize if we had some callers. Because I was working on a Mac here, I've not been able to view the switchboard. So I'm going to try to get in through another computer. So I sincerely apologize if people were trying to call in, but I am in California working on a Mac and it was just difficult. So just want everybody to know that.
Okay, so this is in reference to where the wise men say, we've seen this star in the east. And in a footnote, I say, the most likely explanation of this new star in the sky concerns the extraordinary triple conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in the constellation of Pisces that took place on three separate nights in 7 BC. This new bright light in the sky, which would naturally have been described as a new star, appeared on the nights of May 29th, September 30th, and December 5th, 7 BC. This is by far the most popular explanation of the Star of Bethlehem. Johannes Kepler, after seeing the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Pisces a few days before Christmas in 1603, calculated backwards and discovered the 7 BC event. But Kepler was certainly not the first to call attention to it. In 1977, David H. Clark and two colleagues quoted a similar assertion in the English Church Annals dating from A.D. 1285. And this was first reported, I got this from Sky and Telescope magazine. So
That was a classic article on it, yeah. Yeah, and like I said, the conjunctions are, and then also, what we know about the records of the Roman census and the statements in the Bible, and you put all those things together, when Herod the Great died, and all those clues come together, and
right.
And lead to the suspicion that it was not only 7 BC, but like I said, some have even guessed that it might be somewhere in the the early autumn time period, which is getting really close to being true. So,
yeah, I have another note on that where they've got the shepherds out keeping watch over their flocks by night. And another note I have on that is during the winter time from November until April, when pasturage became slim and rain and cold weather threatened, sheep could no longer be kept outdoors and were placed under cover. Since the sheep were out at night, it is likely that Jesus' birth occurred in or around the warmer summer months rather than the December event.
Yeah, and I honestly can't remember now. It was many years ago that I stumbled upon someone. I'm trying to think. I think they might have even tried to make a guess of a month, and they guessed September or something like that. And I don't remember what they were basing that on. But, they try to put together sort of indirect clues, just like you're pointing out there.
Right. And you say Herod died in 4 B.C., and then there is this thing about the census, which you can use that to calculate too.
But definitely, like I pointed out when I first started talking there, that's the thing that with most Christians, they've never even stopped to think about the whole issue of celebrating Jesus' birth on the 25th of December. I mean, it's not like it's a secret. I mean, all they would have to do is just look, and they would see that, the church openly, talks about the fact that they just assigned that day because by the 4th century, no one remembered when he was born. It's not a mystery, but of course, many Christians would just be, appalled to learn this. It's unfortunate that there are, you have such trivial issues that can get in the way of the revelation of truth, that people will trump the recognition of truth even with the spirit of truth they will trump that recognition of truth because they have some sort of ideological attachment to a fact, or what they think is a fact.
You know, I find I love the academic approach into the facts of all these things, and it is edifying to know these, and especially the way science is catching up and confirming this stuff. But what's significant on a personal level is that so many Urantians have adopted the time to celebrate by socializing, by getting together, doing special study groups, by having potlucks and picnics and conferences. In fact, I'm headed out to the Great Northwest to Camp Brotherhood. I leave tomorrow for an event that's going on out there for the whole Northwest readership to have a conference and a celebration. I know there's one also somewhere over there in the North Carolina or the Carolina areas, and actually, you know, study groups and readers and Urantia associations and societies are doing things all across the world, all around the country to celebrate. Since we don't have a traditional church, this is a really nice way for us to gather, to socialize, and to share our faith and to try and move the kingdom forward. That's what we do, and that's what we should be doing in our socialization.
You know, gentlemen, I was knocked off, and I love it. Y'all didn't even miss me. I love it. I was using one of their portable phones, and it went out of power, and they're packing to leave. I'm taking care of their house and dog while they're gone. Biggest dog I've ever seen. It's not a dog. It's a little horse. And so I was running up and down the stairs, and y'all didn't even miss me. You know what that means? This is truly a study group. I was gone for over 5 minutes, and I was in the chat room, and Larry said, "They don't even know you're gone. They're doing fine without you."
Oh, not true, Ann. We miss you.
Oh, I love it. And I'll say it again, guys. We're going to have to actualize the monies for this two-hour phone call. Because for whatever reason, the calling card, I tried it 5 times. And I use calling cards all the time. And it would not work. It just wouldn't work. So I said, okie dokie. But, you know, I'll say it like my good friend, Brother Howard, who does move in Christianity as a prophet. He believes in fasting, and he knows that I believe in frugal eating, right? So it looks like while I'm in Los Angeles for 1 week, I'm going to be fasting. To pay for this phone call. So tell me what it's going to So all of you in Los Angeles, I've never asked this, so, you know, it's sort of like in some traditions you bring fruit and vegetables. It'll be okay. I'll work it out. But, you know, the gentleman, he came downstairs because they're packing and the dog is barking, and I was putting it on mute when he said, "Oh my God, we're so embarrassed." I said, "That's the dynamics of live broadcasting. That actually gives it fun." And by the way, at one point, the pool man walked by, and the door's wide open. It's all solid glass. This room is solid glass. There's one wall, two walls. And the door was open, and he was listening to you, Chris. You were expounding on the birth of Jesus. And so he was making all this noise, and I put it on mute. And he said, "Wow, that's fascinating what that man is saying." And he had all this pool equipment, right? And he said, "Who are you people?" And so I explained briefly, we're doing a broadcast. I said, "I think they heard you because you're clamoring, you know." And he said, "Wow, I want to know more. What kind of book are y'all reading?" So I just quickly told him, and he went and he started spelling it. He spelled it 4 times. He says, "Whoa, I'm going to research that. I am not religious, and this is fascinating." He's about 30 years old. He walked through the world. So, I know what? I'm going to broadcast from now on, just walk out on the street and put it on speakerphone.
That might be tempting the vicissitudes there, Ann.
I'm not going to do it in a conservative part of the country. We could do it at Berkeley, right? one of the Berkeley, like the Berkeley campus or UCLA. That would be fun, you know. Just put a little sign up. Want to listen to this broadcast? Just step up. Wow, that's a great idea. If y'all like that. We'll not do it in Mississippi, okay? And, you know, my cousin was supposed to call from Mississippi and sing for us, and I sincerely apologize that I could not see the switchboard. I'm actually trying to tap back in now. James, we really would like to hear you sing. Did you like Jamie and I sang last night? Wasn't that great?
That was cool. That was nice, yeah.
I'm trying to see if she's in the house. We could sing it. Is your mom here? She's where, hon? We're saying, tell her, oh, she went to the bank. Tell her I need the money. I want her to sing Happy Birthday, Jesus again. You want to say happy birthday? Say happy birthday to Jesus? Wait a minute, come here. How old are you now? You're 8 years old. Just say happy birthday, Jesus.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
And tell them where you're going.
I'm going to Long Beach, Catalina, in San Diego, and maybe Carlsbad.
Won't that be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a young lady. Her mother is the beautiful friend of mine that's a Jew that loves Jesus, and she told y'all not to tell her parents, right? But they know, and it's quite lovely. I love her parents. I love them. I'll be seeing them here shortly. So you just heard from a beautiful 8-year-old that heard the entire study group last night, James, in Chicago.
Yeah, that was nice. It was a nice treat to have to expand our study group to include some folks on the West Coast. Real nice.
Well, we're down. I'm looking since I can't see the switchboard. It looks like we're down to 1 or 2 minutes.
A minute and 10 seconds.
Oh my gosh! Okay. James, can you sing Mandarin of Choice, a little a cappella, as we close down?
No.
Or you want me
no
to sing Happy Birthday, Jesus?
You
going to make me sing Happy Birthday, Jesus, in my alto voice?
Give it to us, Ann. Go ahead.
Where are you, Jamie? Oh, my gosh. Okay. And we'll end now. And, folks, we really do thank you for joining us today. And our friends in other countries, especially the Punjab, well, no, New Delhi. He's in New Delhi. He is a Sikh. And Virginia, I can't pronounce her name now. I call her Angel. Renjini. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. God bless. Happy birthday, Jesus. And I'm going to sing, thank you, Preston.
Great being here, Ann.
And we'll have Robert Venosa next week, the great artist. And that'll be fun, and we'll talk about that later. Okay, we're signing off with Ann singing her Mississippi alto voice. Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday, dear Jesus. Happy birthday to you, eternally more. God bless y'all.
Goodbye.
Bye now.